Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back to The Millennial Dentist, everybody.
Cheers.
We're back from our month off, and we've got a lot of good content coming up this segment or season or whatever.
I'm excited. There's going to be a lot of good, I would say, I want to bring quality. Some more humor into this.
We can do that. That's how this idea started.
We got to get more humor into
podcasting with the stars.
Like slapping kid kind of humor.
Slapping the kid.
Yeah, we got to work on payments, behavior management techniques.
Hand over mouth is no longer an option.
So hand over mouth doesn't mean that you have to punish them. It's just you put your hands over their mouth. You do that, Daniel?
It's not accepted. No, it's not. You can't do it.
What is now the protocol for a non-behaving child?
For non-behaving child?
Yeah, what do people do?
How do you wake them? Tell us your secret.
Tell show do.
And you do that or your assistant?
Man, there's a lot of different just techniques and just kind of talking to the kids. If the kids can sense that you're scared of them, they're gonna be scared of you.
That's probably our problem.
That's the biggest thing.
It's like a bear. They're like dogs.
Yeah, yeah. So
bears know when you're scared. Don't run from the bear.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just I don't know. It's just years of just working with kids, kind of just visual imagery.
Yeah.
Imagery. Yeah. Paint a picture of the beach in their head, and they enjoy it. Or a toy store.
I'm sure we'll talk about a bunch of random crap this episode, but this kind of episode is going to be like a mailbag. We've got a lot of good questions, so I want to kind of touch base through those questions.
The millennial mailbag.
If you've got questions and you're listening, send us your questions, because that's really why we do this. So we'd rather answer your questions. We're going to have some good live stuff. Hey, I do want to mention before I forget, because I'm just now thinking of it. I haven't even told y'all this yet, but we are going to we're in the early stages of putting together a Millennial Dentist CE weekend that's designed totally for millennials that there's potential we do it in Raleigh at T-Bones. He's offered to potentially use his site. But where we do a 2-day course that's strictly designed for dentistry for the new graduate. So we're going to bring in multiple speakers, topics that cover everything from dealing with loans, financial stuff, to finding the right associateship,
that's a
sweet CE weekend that jumpstarts people from graduation. So
what about the dental students? Can they come?
Yeah, our dental students would be great people. That would be great.
Yeah.
And we're going to make it very affordable. But it'll be an awesome. So pretty stoked about that. It's been brewing. So
no, I'm excited.
That's great. Kinda cool.
Well, first off, Jeremy from Ohio.
Hey, Jeremy.
Jeremy, thanks for listening. We like to have our Ohio people. He had
the
a question
Ohio.
On the Ohio. He, I guess he goes to Ohio State, but he had a question on sedation. Payment is kind of directed at you and us both, and Holsinger, I guess, as well. He has the opportunity to do IV. At his GPR, and wanted to know what you thought about IV sedation and what Dad and I were doing. If Holsinger, you're doing a sedation, and then his two part question to that was, is it hard to manage the IV and do the surgery? So I'll kind of let you lead off on it.
So it's a great question because this is something actually popped up yesterday. I talked to Joe. Shout out to Dr. Joe Meng. He's a prosthodontist, one of the only two prosthodontists in the state of Montana that I talked to yesterday. We were talking about the same thing.
One of 12 dentists in the state of Montana.
True. So we were talking about the best thing that I did was I invested into my IV sedation after I did my oral sedation.
Where did you do your course?
I did the IV in the Western Surgical Institute in San Jose.
Was that a weekend course, a multi-day course?
So it was an 8-day course, started I think Saturday through going to the next week, and every day you
a solid 8 days.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Because you're supposed to, as a GP or a general dentist, you have to take a 60-hour, at least in the state of Tennessee, which in a lot of the states is the same thing, because we had a lot of than is from other states. So you need to have 60 hours of CE, which out of that 60 hours, those 60 hours are going to be a lot of interaction with patients. So you're going to have to put a lot of patients to sleep or do IV with them, and you get monitored and things like that. So I paid, and they're typically about, they start around $10,000-$11,000 and they go to about $15,000. University of Alabama does it for about $10,000-$11,000. But then you got to keep going back and forth about 2-3 weekends, like starts from Thursday. Because I did the research, like trying to find out which one is the best one and fastest one. And that one, which it takes a week, that you go in the morning and you come home at like 6 or 7 exhausted, because you got to do your ACLS stuff training at the same time. But when I came back, I would compare the dose of my alprazolam, or I used to give Xanax and triazolam. I just kept switching around with patients, trying to get some. I gave some triazolam, I gave some Xanax, and I did Valium for everyone, and hydroxyzine for the smokers that I used to do. But when I came back and I offered the IV sedation, and I did it for, right now I'm doing it for $650, a flat fee, $650. I used to also have Dr. Yuzerski, anesthesiologist, to come and do the whole general sedation, because that would make my life easier. So I have a good understanding of what it means to have an anesthesiologist chair side by you, and you do the dentistry, versus me doing it all by myself.
And plus doing conscious, which is what you do before. You've kind of seen all three.
Correct. So now, to the question, if I did oral sedation or conscious, I have no problem doing the dentistry at the same time of oral sedation. That is no problem. Like, there's no, like, I'm not getting distracted in the middle, nothing like that. With the IV showing up in the morning, that's the problem. Trying to get these patients, get the IV going and rolling. And then, because you got to get back, like, say, for example, we start the surgery at 7:30 most of the time on Friday. I have to be there at 7:15. If I didn't have to do IV and I had an anesthesiologist, I would walk in 8 o'clock and the patient is already numbed up for me and ready to roll. But because I am doing the IV myself, I have to show up before the patient shows up. I got to check their BP, make sure everything is good, to ask them the necessary questions about as far as if they're they haven't ate anything, they fast for at least 6 hours prior, and then do the IV. But when I did the IV, when I see my performance as far as how much faster I'm finishing up stuff because the patient is asleep, or at least halfway asleep because they still have to breathe on their own, it made me so much happier. I'm like I said, that's the best $10,000 I spent. Yes, of course, I missed the whole week of not working, but then when I'm right now, it's just the best thing that I did.
So comparison to, what do you feel like you're doing most of? I mean, you're no longer doing really conscious at all.
I'm doing 90% IV.
And then 10%
and then 10% oral. I'm throwing in IV for some major cases that are $20,000. I'm like, let me just for sure myself. But the oral, it helps when you titrate it with the nitrous. Now, that helps tremendously with the nitrous if you can titrate it. Now, a lot of patients, if you can talk to the patient. Now, in the oral sedation course, and I went to my oral sedation course using Doc's education, Doc's sedation, and they talked a lot about communicate with the patient prior you give them the pills and know they have a patient, understand them. And that's where, but sometimes when I talk to the patient and they used to take alprazolam for years, or a couple of years, they so used to it where the oral sedation is not really going to do much other than maybe like a little bit of maybe just a glass of wine. And when I did the oral, like the IV thing is just changing the game for me, at least for some of these major stuff. So if I didn't have to do full arch, if I didn't have to raise a flap, if I didn't have to do like few implants from different side, then I probably IV would not be like what I need, but it is definitely helping me for those cases.
So you feel like now the negative to having to monitor that and the patient at the same time is worth the benefit?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes, good. I do. Yes.
All right, Dad, you've done conscious sedation for 30 something years.
Yes.
So why don't you talk about that, I guess, a little bit?
Yeah, that's what I've always done. I did conscious sedation back before the days of permits. You know, I was, our original conscious sedation was...
Legal? Is that legal or not legal? Or doesn't really matter, I guess.
Yeah, well, when I got out of school in 88, you didn't have to have a permit to do conscious sedation. Your dental degree allowed you to do what you were doing.
Gotcha.
And we would do 2 Mepergan Fortis and a Valium, which is a Demerol Phenergan combination that they don't make anymore, and a Valium in that, Then I went and took a CE course on sedation and learned about Halcyon, and I was using Halcyon, triazolam, for 10 years before docs came out with the whole permit thing, and then the state started doing permits. And so I've been permitted conscious sedator since probably 2000. But I've taken ACLS now probably 7 or 8 times through the docs program. And that's the program I've done. And I've done several of their programs. They're advanced when they're sedation solutions. It's excellent CE. I've learned a ton. My theory on the sedation and the drugs is I've got 2 or 3 that I use. I'm comfortable with them. I kind of stay in that ballpark. I don't jump around a lot. You know, our general regimen that you and I use is, you know, Valium the night before. For a under 30-something, I'll usually do 2 Halcyon, 0.25, 1 hour before somebody drives them. They're generally where I want them when they get here. Yeah, if I need to add them a hydroxyzine, I can. You know, they're getting numbed up. The wisdom teeth are gone. They're out the door in an hour, give or take. You know, if somebody gets here, you know, you had a patient today that came in, you did the consult, you gave her the hydroxy and the Halcyon, you know, it took her an hour to get, you know, so you kind of lost that production time. Whereas if you'd done an IV, you could have taken her right to the place. But, you know, IV is the next. As I've seen the evolution of sedation throughout my career, I think medical legally, there will become a time in your practice, you know, you millennial dentist practice careers, maybe not mine, where you have to have IV sedation if you're going to start doing this. I think the states are cracking down. You know, I think they're concerned about the cowboys out there. The accidents do happen and things, you know, oral sedation is super safe. All these accidents that happen are generally airway issues.
Yeah.
Which is going to happen even with an IV sedation if you're not careful.
Yeah, there's been a lot of, with like sedations, like there's like deaths or like just a poor result is because of lidocaine overdose too. And so like, it's not even the sedation med. It's just, they're not numb enough. So you just keep, you're trying to get the work done, I guess. And they
just keep bumping them.
They keep bumping up the lidocaine, not looking at the max. And so.
That's when you give septo.
So, I think we've started noticing though, in, you know, especially the last 2 years, really, since we really started stepping up the amount of treatment, the amount of sedation we're doing on older patients, where I think Dad and I both are realizing that, you know, at some point IV is going to be nice, just because I imagine it's much more predictable on a 60-year-old that has had either, you know, taken a lot of drugs in the past or is on more medications. It's a more predictable sedation then, because that's where we've noticed is like when they come in and they're not sedated, we may waste 2.5 hours trying to, you know, dose them to the right place.
Or you give 2 Halcyon to a 60-year-old that's overweight, that has sleep apnea issues. That's all kicking in. The whole office is hearing them.
Yeah.
And you're trying to work on them when they're, you
it's
know.
It's hard.
It is very difficult because it's unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen with some of these patients, especially if they had a trauma episode and something is going to come up with the sound of the drill that is going to make them remember those traumatic events. So I feel like, to me, also one of the big points that I'd like to mention is the team needs to be like so on point, and the doctor's responsibility to when I started doing IV, one of the things, like, they scare you so much, and it's good to get scared because they show you the legality of it and some of these lawsuits and things that the patient actually ended up dying. But at the same time, the practice model, it's not one of those that you can come in. It's not like a corporate where you're, oh, that patient is sedated in 4. I don't have to do a hygiene check. No, you're not going to leave that patient who's sedated with an assistant because she doesn't know what to do as soon as they drop. So that's part of it. Meaning as soon as, if you're going to do the IV, know that that patient is your responsibility that morning or that afternoon that you are doing, because you cannot really do much other dentistry. Now, if it wasn't for that, you could probably do other stuff. But with the IV thing and having the team to understand the importance of, once you put these patients under, that it's very important. So also, if you ever do, like you talked about, a lot of these CEs, it's great when you take your staff to some of these CEs so they understand how these patients react when they come into the office. They can understand them better and know that. So that's a good point, to take your team to these CEs, for especially for sedation.
Holsinger, what's the sedation like in pedo now? Is there a lot of, or is it mainly OR? Is OR IV? Is that general anesthesia? Or are people doing conscious sedation on kids much? Or what's the kind of the sedation look like?
Yeah, there's a lot of oral sedation for kids. You just got to kind of look at where you want to take the risk. And I mean,
are y'all doing any sedation in your practice?
We do some. I mean, we dose pretty light. I mean, we you could definitely dose some deeper, but It's basically how comfortable do you want to be with that child at that time? I know what we sometimes we tell parents, like, we're our, the kid be responsive and then like passed out completely. And I mean,
tears mean they're alive.
Yeah, yeah. And so there's a lot of, depending on the state, a lot of IV sedations in the office, which is really good. There's also a service around here that there's a dental anesthesiologist that can come to your office to do it. And there's like an MD anesthesiologist that can come to your office to do like IV sedations and like general anesthesia. Those are really good. The issue is that state ran program, at least here in Tennessee, doesn't allow those providers to be compensated. So you have to go to a surgery center OR that has been accredited through them, which also charges a larger fee that the state is paying out than what these anesthesia providers could be coming to your office to do. So it depends on the state where, if it's more IV, more OR. The problem with OR is privileges are kind of hard to come by these days, depending on the area you're in, because honestly, dental cases aren't profitable for a hospital.
Sure. I mean, especially on a five-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, depending on what their compensation is, I mean, they make most of their money off the first 15, 20 minutes of the surgery. And then after that, it's basically they're breaking even or maybe almost losing money. So the longer your case goes, I mean,
you got to throw all that stainless steel at that first 15 minutes.
And an average pedo case takes an hour, hour and a half.
And that's doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And that's doing a lot of stuff too. But, when they can have a ENT come in and throw in ear tubes and about five or six kids an hour, I mean, that it makes more sense for them to use that operatory time for them.
Capnography, monitor capnography in the OR or not yet?
Oh, in the OR, absolutely. Okay. Oh, yeah. But in the, at least in the state of Tennessee, I know other states are kind of the same way, and the Academy of Pediatric Dentistry is saying that everybody should have capnography in their office for sedating
should
any
or
kid.
Must.
They say should right now. But
Tennessee's a must, isn't it?
No.
It's not for general dentists.
Not, I know for pedo is different. That's why the pedo, I think pedo
that'll be,
are
that'll
so
be,
much
that's the
that's
next thing
like
coming.
A year
it's
or
coming.
Two. Yeah, I agree.
It's
yeah,
close.
That's why I bought the monitor. And that's another thing that the doctors and dentists out there, because
we don't have one.
If you get out of school and you're graduating or in dental school, when you get out, get a monitor that does capnography.
Absolutely. Yeah. Go ahead and just get that one.
Or at least don't buy the capnography module, but have a...
One that could be upgraded.
That would be upgraded. Kind of like a 3D that you can buy a pen and now 3D can get upgraded too. So buy something like that because you don't want to have multiple of those because they cost $4,000 or $5,000, some of those.
Yeah. And with the capnography, it's totally different because you don't have actual like closed system in the airway. So, I mean, you're really just looking at the waveform. You're not looking at the numbers at all. I mean, it's just making sure they have a waveform.
I do like the numbers, though. I do like the numbers to make it easier.
Big numbers guy.
Big numbers guy. Well, thanks, Jeremy. That was a good question. That was good content there.
Good, solid.
Okay, Brad. Brad's a D2. Brad didn't tell us where he's from, I don't think, but he wanted some of his classmates and himself have kind of looked on, you know, how do you find the right associateship and then kind of how do you communicate with older dentists and with older patients as well? Anybody want to take the lead on that one?
Older patients. I can tell you I love older patients.
I don't think it's that hard to communicate.
No, I think a lot older patients, they've gone through so much shit. I'm sorry that in dentistry, in dental offices, that first thing that they do, they come into office, they're impatient. You got to give them that. They're impatient. They just sit down and your assistant go like, oh, she's mad. Or she's like, well, of course, look at them. They've gone through so much crap and look at their x-ray. That could kind of show you like how much dentistry.
You can see people. That's actually a good topic. That's what you can tell a lot about a patient from their like x-rays and their dental, you know, how did they spend money? Have they been through work? Have they crappy dentistry? You can learn a lot.
Stereotype the heck out of them with that. But no, seriously, like you look at them and you just sit down and be very, to me, my older patients, and that's how I've been even in dental school. I had my older patients were my first one. I got done with all my fixed and things that I had to do with the older, and my pedo had to be the last thing because I have a problem with kids apparently. But anyway, so that's to me the older population as far as patients go, they're the best. I get along with them. I have a ton of them that do testimonials. They love to, and also those older patients refer so many more to your practice than younger patients too. That's how I feel like because they talk.
Our generation, I 100% agree with that. Our generation's bad about that. You want to touch on this?
I'll touch on this a little bit. you know, it's funny because, you know, I've got, as a, you know, third generation practice owner here, I've had so many patients that have come all the way through the line. So we've got a lot of older patients. They loved Sully coming into practice because their impression was he's right out of school. He's got all the new stuff. You know, he's going to be the, he's got, you know, and that, in that, which is kind of funny because, you know, schools are not the best at that, but that's the patient's perception. So really coming out of school, the patients are going to think you've got it all. And, then the
and that's
thing,
a good, that's a good way to spin it, because when you come out and you're not confident, you know, you can use the whole, you know, well, we're kind of learning the latest and greatest stuff. And I'll say that, I'd be like, you know, well, I'm bringing a lot of new energy, new techniques and new stuff, you know, whether that's necessarily true or
we
not.
We had a patient today, it's one of those crazy patients that left the practice, came back and spoke to me at the front. And then when it was time for a hygiene check, she requested Sully because she didn't think I had anything new to bring to the table.
Mind you, this patient is like got some serious TMD stuff going on, which is like, you know, super difficult. And like the last thing I want to deal with right now is like a new graduate trying to like, you know, I don't know. I'm just like,
she probably
just
liked this man bun.
Yeah. Well, that was the best part. I think, you know, I think she commented on my, she called it my top knot. My top
knot. And for you out there in iPod land, just Google John Belushi, the samurai skits from Saturday Night Live in the late 70s, and you'll see exactly what young Dr. Sully is rocking here.
So, but it's been a hit with the older patients, you know? So I would say don't necessarily worry about the generation. I think that's been hard to communicate with to me the most is almost like the 40s, maybe 50s, kind of like your age group's the trickiest because they're like,
because my age group has got children your age.
Yeah, I think that's why.
And,
that's
and
a good
half
point.
Of them are still living at home in their basement and they're unemployed.
Yeah, so I think, so you got to kind of be careful with those. But the older patients, it's usually not a big deal. The younger patients, not. But playing on that is
and
good.
And I want to take this question a little different direction than even just older patients. I mean, when you get out of school, most of the patients are older than you are. So, I mean, like, when you get in there, they're looking at you like, who's this kid? Young kid? I mean, I know when I first started, I mean, I would always wear a white coat just so at least they knew I was the doctor.
Oh,
Yeti down. And you'd be talking to him and I walk in this one. I remember this one patient. He said like, hey, man, are you old enough to be a doctor? And I go, well, I mean, yeah, but we got to hurry up. My mom has to pick me up at 5 is what I told him. So, I mean, yeah, just messing
great
with
answer.
Him.
That's
yeah.
a good one. I need to use that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. And I'll
I
add
still
to that
get
too,
it right now.
The confidence, you know, whether if you need to wear a white coat, if you need to wear a certain tie, you know, wear whatever makes you feel confident and, you know, and helps you do that because it is, they sense that. And so if you're confident about it, we've talked about that before.
Back to the bear issue.
Yeah. If you they can sense your, you know, indecision on diagnosing a crown, they're going to wait on it, you know?
And it's a great point I want to bring up right here because a lot of dentistry being done now, we talk about being confident, but if you, and I was talking about to the prosthodontist about the same thing. If I'm not confident about a treatment plan, I will stop and either do a wax up, do a study model, and get the patient either back or refer.
That's a great idea. I should take
thinking
that.
About, oh, I'm confident, but then I'm confident I can fix your mouth. And then you get into this whole dilemma and the treatment plan to where I've learned so much more dentistry by not accepting that case that same day. I say, hey, why don't I do? I took my pictures. I'm going to do some clinical photography. I have your cast. Then I will study the heck out of it and talk to prosthodontists.
Patients appreciate that.
And they appreciate
they really
it. They come back. And before then, when they come back next week or whenever, if I took the case, I'm going to be so confident because I know what I'm going to do. At the same time, if I'm not, and I talk to, and I've referred a lot of cases this way because I saw how much work it's going to take, and I'm not ready at that the top of my clinical career that I referred to other surgeons and pros, and I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, another thing along those lines, like if you have a treatment plan, you're not confident and you're like, I don't know what to do here. Like, I mean, I know I can do this. I could do this. What is best? There is nothing wrong with, especially if the associate in a practice and you have the senior dentist that is as your mentor that's been doing this for years. I know, especially for you, Sully. I mean, you see a patient, you're like, there's all these options you can do. You're like, you know something? We're going to talk about this another day. I'm going to go back and talk to the senior doctor. And
Sully and I do it every day. I mean, I'll say, you know, I'm going to get Dr. Sully in here. We're going to talk about this. And
absolutely,
I'll bounce
yeah.
it back to him, which when I do that, that gives him credibility in their eyes. Hey, I'm going to go talk to him about it. you know, that I don't have all the answers, and vice versa. And it really plays well.
And the patients, I appreciate that, how much you guys both care about their well-being and the dental care as much as you're like, oh, well, I got this, you know, like I can do this myself. That's a great point, Holsinger. I'm proud of you for that.
Thank you.
That was beautiful, whole shot.
That was good.
Hey, I'm not even wearing figs, but.
I know, everyone else is wearing figs. I'm trying to get figs to sponsor the podcast.
You got to get
figs. I sent them an email.
Yeah, we
sent
them an email, all together, three of us.
Hey, I could be the doctor in need.
You're the doctor. Let's all get
the doctor. I could be the doctor in need for y'all.
All right, Brad, that was good on communication. Finding right associateship, as far as that goes. You know, we've talked about that some. I think the best thing, you know, is the more dentists you talk to, the better you're going to find the right one. I would talk to another thing that is really good about patients' communication is to look for is if a patient comes to you and they've been to six other dentists and they've had all these problems, they're still looking for the right answer. That's something that's like big red flashing lights, because you know it's so often that patient will walk in here and they'll be like, well, I'm ready to spend $15,000 on something and four other good dentists have tried to treat them or they bounced around and now they're your door. Be careful. Use that's some knowledge that, you know, I've jumped into cases like, oh yes, they're here and they're ready to spend money and not really, you know, I'm like, wait a second, why are they here? And why have they turned down four other dentists? And that could be.
That's a good.
Remember when you took your denture classes and the prosthodontist said, beware of the patient that walks in with six sets of dentures in a baggie.
Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah, good point.
Well, and the other thing too is, for me, I've always kind of done this. It's a little bit of the profile thing again, but I know my colleagues in my area. I know their reputations. I know who does good work. I know the specialists. I know the general dentists. I know the ones that I probably would not refer to. Somebody comes in from one of these good dentists that I know that's been practicing with a good reputation, and they've got an issue, odds are it's a patient issue. If they come in from somebody that, you know, the guy's been before peer review three times and he's been suspended from his license, they may have a dental issue. And so it kind of helps a little bit, at least in your geographic area. You know, if somebody comes from Payman, I'm going to know that they've probably been treated really well, and I'm going to be doing good to keep up with it. Whereas, you know, if somebody comes from, you know, somewhere else, not necessarily.
Well, and on that note, too, these are just good little nuggets. Yeah, I feel
they're
like
good nuggets. I mean,
about.
I wish these nuggets were reaching me when I was in dental school.
I know. Is when, indeed, this goes back even to dental school, when you're looking at stuff and diagnosing stuff, you know, be careful to judge other dentists' work and tell patients, oh, well, that margin on that crown's terrible. We need to redo it, you know, because there's a lot of times where you get in there and that crown 15 and you're just doing the best you can to put a margin on it.
Yeah, you can't see it back there.
And
I mean,
so,
you can't
feel
it.
So I think,
tongue.
You know, you have to think about that is, you know, one is, you know, is this the best that someone could have done? And can I do better? Because if you're going to get in there, you know, you want your ideas to do better. And then never judge someone else's work until you've
oh, yeah,
because
that's
that,
a great point.
Well, and never verbally judge someone else's work in front of a patient. You know, we as dentists need to stick together.
Yep. It's a small community.
You know, I was asked one time by playing golf with an attorney back when I played golf. And actually, he asked me if I would testify against a classmate of mine. And I absolutely said no. And, you know, the guy really had not done anything wrong, but it was questionable. But his last name was S. He was like across a cubicle. I mean, we spent 4 years of hell through dental school. There's no way I was going to do that.
Speaking of that, I want to mention, you said about the associateship. Now, that's something, a great point, where when we were in school, a lot of my classmates were thinking about, oh, I'm going to associate with him or I'm going to do this and that. And do not think that your buddy that you drink with in dental school is going to be your best partner when you get out. Some of those, I'm serious. Do not think of some of that stuff when you're doing dental school, your mind changes. You're going to mature. You're going to get out of school. You're going to have family. They're going to have family. A lot of things happen. When things happen and it gets financially related, some people are not the same people.
Money changes things.
Money changes
that
things.
That probably goes for dating classmates as well.
And dating classmates, that's a whole another podcast episode.
Yeah, we should talk about. We should bring all our friends
you
on.
Bring all
that
us.
Have either dated or
well, as far as associateship, when you see somebody and you're drinking that Jack and you're having that whole party, like, dude, we're going to be best buddy. We're going to be best partners. I don't know. I would think about it when you're completely conscious. And also, when you do it,
I think that's a good point, man.
And it's
or
also,
sober.
It's a good thing when you do it when partner up, do some surgery, for example. You know how we had clinic partners? Yeah. And that was a good point because I could see that, oh my God, you cannot pay me enough to be this guy's partner or be associate, no matter what, how much money I'll make, because it's just not worth it. And it's not a good match. That matching, it's don't think of it it's just one few times of assisting each other. Just think about it a little bit more, because I know a lot of my classmates that got into associateship and they thought of that person. They're like, oh, this is cool. And then they're now not even talking to each other. So that's a good, I think that's a very important point.
Brad, my last point on the associateships as far as finding the right one, I think a great place to start is looking at your reps in your area you want to work, your Patterson reps, your Cheyenne reps, your Benko reps, your whoever reps, your, I don't know, whoever the reps are for those places, asking them, because one, they're going to know the practice, you know, how long is the practice established. They're going to know the team of the practice. Is the team like working there? They're going to know what kind of procedures they're going to do, and they're going to know when something's coming available. And so that's a great person to kind of keep in touch with as far as finding, because a lot of these jobs, a lot of these associateships, they don't necessarily know they're looking for one until they finally are. And so those are the people I would keep an ear on. Great question.
And just find the place you want to live and make sure that first associateship you do with a non-compete and a contract, that you don't run yourself out of town if it doesn't work out.
Hashtag asking for a friend.
Asking for a friend.
No, I think that's a good point. Elliot, you did well with that. Holsinger has zero non-compete right now.
It's a great experience from what you learned, you know?
Shout out to Brian at USC. Brian doesn't even have a question for us. He just invited us all out to Rock and Riley's little Irish bar. So
we're in, Brian.
We are definitely in. We will let you know when we're coming out there. I don't know when we're coming out to LA, but I'm sure we'll be out there
in Anaheim. That's not too far away.
June in San Diego, yeah. October.
So when we're up there, we will definitely hit you up, because I would love enough to drink. And if not, hey, if you're in that area, go support Brian at Rock and Riley's, because
Southwest supports
the podcast.
Yeah, if Southwest has a sale, we'll just jump on a flight.
Greg from New Mexico. Thanks for listening to the podcast, Greg. We appreciate it. He had a couple questions on CE. You know, what do we think is a good budget for CE? Obviously, I think the three of us are huge proponents, or four of us are, and motivators of using CE. Taman, why don't you give us an example, or you go first.
I think for my CE, I can give you an idea. Like corporate dentistry paid for a lot of my CE.
How much CE did you get paid for because of corporate? Because that's a good thing.
I think honestly,
you really took advantage of that.
I like to sit back and look at it, but I
do they pay for your IV sedation?
No, I paid for that and oral myself. But then as far as I think for IV, they paid half of it. But as far as the whole CE thing, because they knew how aggressively I want to go and do them all, they even had an extra, they wouldn't give that many CEs to any of their associate or their people. But then I think about 50 or 60,000 in a 2.5 years span. As far as traveling goes and putting all that together, I had a lot of...
phenomenal.
And like I said, that's when the people say like, the corporate dentist, man, I learned everything I know, most of what I know from that corporate dentist.
You are the extreme on that. I honestly think
Heartland gives you... Heartland, I think... I don't know much about other corporates, but I think Heartland is one of the ones that does give a lot of...
You've been willing to go and take that many hours... most guys in private practice, you know, you'll take 3, 4, 5 weekends a year, you know, maybe a 3 or 4 day course, but you've been the poster child for that.
And but you're also, it's a great example because you say, okay, someone who graduated, you know, with some debt, went into corporate, they busted their ass, and now, you know, you're raking in $100,000 in collections in a month, you know, in your first year as a startup. It's pretty insane. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I would attribute a crap ton of that to all the education you got.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so when people are like, oh my gosh, should I spend $10,000 on that's going to blow a lot of
students.
So
how do you do that? What's the budget look like? Because you know, like marketing, they say like what, 10% production you want to put in marketing? Is that what it is?
So I think, you know, as an associate, I think it's a great deal if you can work in some CE. I mean, with mine, I think I had $2,500 for the year to take some CE, and it was $5,000. Okay, so that was really good. And I used every bit of it.
He went over pretty quickly.
You know, but
and five grand is
probably
like,
paid more than that.
But five grand is a weekend, right? It's each day, isn't that dentistry is each day is about $1,500.
It depends on the courses.
So what I like to look at is, okay, what is your return on your CE going to be? Okay. And how long it is take you to do that? Because if an implant course costs 10 grand, okay, and you're going to have to pay a kit, so that's 12 grand or in some implants. Now we're at like 13 grand. How many implants do I have to place to do that? So if I'm going to charge $2,000 an implant, let's say, just for simple math for me, then that's like 6.5 implants. So if I can place, you know, one implant, you know, or two implants a month, then I will pay that off in 3 months and then I'm in the green. So that's a very easy, reasonable goal. And so you got to think like that, not think like, oh, I'm cutting this check that's never returning. I mean, all of us will go around and say the CE that we've done is a huge contributing factor to that. So, and that's investing in yourself. So, you know, I think a reasonable effort for a new graduate would be to try to say, you know, maybe somewhere between, what do you think, 8 to 10 grand
at
a
least.
Year?
I think the first few years out of school, because
they're the most important, right?
That's the most important. That's when I was like, man, I don't know any of these. And it's, guess what? A lot of these stuff are so much different than what I learned, because these people are clinical dentists, been working for so many years. And I'm listening to the same guy or the guy in school that was a researcher for 40 years. So like, why don't I listen to him now? When I tested him out from the new guys that I went to the CEs, I learned so much more. So I would say the first few years out of school would be more. I would put
more.
At least a good 10 grand, at least the first year.
And I'd like to see that divided up into maybe one thing that is going to bring it a new skill.
That's a great point. So like, what subject? Like, do not try to do
smiles,
so many. Yes.
Implants. Don't try to do everything. Yeah. Pick maybe one that's going to bring
one thing
something.
And focus every couple of years on that subject and master it and do a lot of cases. Do not just go to a CE. Because a lot of people are like, oh, well, I've done the CE, but I've never placed an implant. I'm like, before you went to CE, didn't you line up your cases ahead of time, knowing that, hey, when I'm coming back, I'm going to throw these screws at you. So you had to have them lined up, because I have a ton of friends that gone to these CEs, pay 10 grand to go to Mexico, come back and
you're
haven't
right.
placed a single implant.
You should have one that you're doing for free.
Yes.
The Monday morning.
Put it free. Do all that stuff for free. Like even for sedation, where I mentioned.
You get it. Though you
put
get
it for throwing the C, the IV for free.
When I bought my Periolase and we went out to California, I went to Denver for my first 3 days CE that you have to go to CE before they'll bring you the laser. Mine was delivered on Monday morning. I had 3 or 4 Lanaps already set up that week, and I've never looked back with my Periolase from my Lanap. It's probably done over 1,000 cases in 8 years. My return on my investment is probably $75,000, and I've done over $1 million in osteosurgery.
That's crazy.
Wow.
So yeah, so that's a big thing. You have something.
I'll say one thing that as a new graduate coming out, don't fall into the trap as where the dental board tells you, hey, you just graduated, you don't have to have any CE.
Yes.
Oh,
gosh.
My God.
So that's the stupidest rule.
Yeah. I mean, I see it like, I mean, you have to get on your feet. You're thinking you want to take it easy on people.
But it almost implies like you don't need it.
You need to learn. Yeah.
Well, and back to this learning new skill, local dental societies and local state meetings and all are great. And, you know, you can go to the Hinman and
I'm not
at all. But, you know, when I go to the Hinman, I go to the exhibits.
Yeah,
I go to Midwinter, I go to the exhibits. That's what I'm there for. When I go to CE, I go to Scottsdale, to the Cerec Institute. I go to Panky. You know, I go to the Mish Institute. You know, Payman signed up for COIS.
For COIS,
you know,
is awesome.
Spear.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing, that, you know, our audience is millennials here. I know that Cerec Doctors and Spear both have online stuff that is phenomenal.
It's awesome.
You have to have self-discipline to watch it.
Be a member of academies, of organizations. We talked about AAID being one of them, American Academy of Implant Dentistry. There is AGD, Academy of General Dentistry. You could do like fellowship. But one of the things that I, from these CEs that we've been talking about, that I learned, the education that came from them was not just traveling and listening to the speakers. I honestly, from some of them, the speaker was a waste of time. It was the people that were in the class that I talked to.
And you can't get that online.
During the breaks, talking to them.
The dinners afterwards. the breakfast before, the lunches before, during.
The lunches,
yes.
And that communication, that networking that I made with them have made me so much more knowledgeable than the actual speaker.
Excellent point, Payman.
And that's the thing where don't think of, oh, CE is just that guy. But no, just talk to all these people, because now I have friends in oral surgeons in different states that I call for help. I'm like, hey, what would you do in this case? And they help me more than I know the guy who taught me.
Yeah. Who wants to be a millionaire? You'd be set up because you can call many friends. You know what I mean? You'd be good.
And within that budget, I think finding something you can add scale, I think it's also good if, you know, everyone's going to know your own confidence level and your own communications, but investing in your ability to communicate with patients, treatment planning is a big one.
Loans for those that can, like if somebody asks, like, okay, so for CE, when I got out of school, I already have
$200,000.
Yeah, so
I did Lending Club for Pinhole.
So you can get
You can get, like, all these big CE courses that are expensive are going to offer financing options. And so that's what we did. I mean, Pinhole was like, I think like $5,000 or something like that. So I did like we did 12 months, no interest through Lending Club.
Okay. Did you take it while you were still in dental school, or were you actually out at
that
point? I took
6 months smiles while I was, I took that senior year.
That's
dental
cool.
School.
CE in
That's
dental cool. school.
Which is awesome, because I'm in there with like, 45, 60 year old dentists, and they're like, wait, you're a senior in dental school? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, if only I started
that's
taking
awesome.
CE.
Yes. And that's what, point. And that's what, as a, 30 year practitioner here, hearing you guys, y'all get it. That's why you're where you are. The other thing is, I know y'all have talked about finances and loans and interest rates and a lot of that stuff and return on investments. I know Sully's the credit card guru over here. Your best investment as a young dentist is going to be in yourself, in your practice, and in your technology and your skill. Just like my Lanap with my Periolase has returned 1,000% to me. My CEREC has. I know y'all have heard the talks about us talk about cone beam. These things, a 0.5% on your interest rate on your student loan is nothing when you're you've just tripled your production because you brought in
That's
implants.
Huge. Yeah. It is. If you could take $10,000 to pay down more on student loans versus $10,000 on CE, the return on investment there is so much bigger than 7%.
It's not even it's mathematically computable.
So, the biggest way to make more money is not to cut costs, it's to increase production.
Yes.
Let's look at that. So great question, Greg. We ate that one up too. Man, this is killing it.
I guess we're hungry.
We're coming to the end. We are definitely hungry. I'm getting hungry. Last question, Alex from San Antonio, the other UTSH,
UTHSC. Yeah.
In San Antonio says, he loves all the stuff we talk about. We appreciate that. Thanks for listening. He had two questions, kind of one I'd like to hear more about. How do we maximize our education while in dental school? And a little bit of the business of dentistry. I think we'll talk probably more about the business of dentistry on another episode, but because that we'll probably could take a whole episode on.
Yeah.
But as far as I think that is a great question. How do we maximize education while a dental student? I think the first part is, one, find the things that you're interested in and start to learn more. If you find faculty members that are passionate, that you feel like, because there's faculty members that are there because it's like they
have to be there.
There's faculty members who are there who can't practice anymore, so that's what they do. There's some that are retired.
And they have to be there, or they want to be there.
So that's a good point. And then find the ones that want to be there, who've got private practice experience, and just like ask them questions. All these questions that you're thinking of, ask them, and ask different ones to get different opinions. You're going to have people who are in the military, who did, work for nonprofits, who worked in private practice, who worked for corporate. Pick their brains, ask questions. The other thing is get involved in one, podcasts. That's huge, I think.
It is. And
not just ours, but there's tons of other dental podcasts that I like. And getting online, Facebook groups are becoming huge now. Dental Town's one that's been there forever, obviously. But then there's others that we've mentioned that are great. Spear Education would be a phenomenal one. I think you have to pay something for it, but there are more videos and more information on that site than I could ever dream about. You can get your own stuff. But those are, as fun as it is to, and then I would also say enjoy dental school because you're going to get to learn soon enough. I think that was Holsinger's point earlier.
Yeah. Just help your classmates out. Don't have this me mentality and where you look out for yourself. And then all these people in your class and in dental school, they're going to be your colleagues when you get out years down the road.
But you never get to see them though.
How would you maximize your education if you went back? I think that's a better way to phrase the question. What would you have done differently in your education in dental school?
I don't think anything else. Maybe spent more time in the pedo clinic.
for me. But I mean, like you say, you never see them, but I have 10 people from my class that are like local colleagues that
right there.
Are in my area.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, I mean, like you say, you never see them, but you never know where you're going to end
sure,
up.
Yeah.
What would you do differently if you go back?
If I went back, trying to get more education would be some of the asking questions, what you said, the professors that you like and you enjoy time hanging out and ask questions with, that's where I would focus in and spend more time in that department, wherever department that would be, that I will see. But some of the things that I wish I did are everything you mentioned at the beginning, meaning that all that online, I didn't do any of that online stuff. I didn't know. And now I get online and I see these dental students and I get so jealous because dental student I saw on Dental Hacks or some, I don't know, some other form. The guy printed a 3D model surgical guide on his own. He planned the surgery and he's putting implants and he's a third year dental student. And that's something I'm like, how do you even start to do that stuff? So the online community, I think for millennials being out there, most of us are so great at it. I was not really, that's something that like Dental Town or getting online, getting more, don't take no for an answer from a lot of your professors in dental school. If they say no, just go and research it. Find out if there's an article or read stuff. So,
well, and I think maximizing my education, I would suggest maybe going to some of these big meetings, like either Chicago Midwest or something where you're going to get exposure to the exhibits. Not
it's
as
usually
much the
free
questions.
Registration fees.
It's usually
students.
Free. Yep, yeah, I know Jimenez. And just walking the exhibits and seeing the products and talking to different people is such a freaking awesome experience.
That's something I never did, and I wish I did.
No,
too.
I did too. The other thing I would say that I think that I spent, well, what I did do is, and I'm glad I did it and spent a lot of time, was my senior year, I spent a lot of time trying to read as much as I could about practice management. Business, personal finance.
He was a townie. His default.
I was a townie.
But that was back when townie was. I mean, I don't know. That was towards the end of. Right now, I don't know how much of it is getting updated or people looking at it. But
so you know, trying to educate yourself. I mean, as dentists, you're most likely about to become either a practice owner or a small business owner or potentially. And so you get absolutely zero education in that area in dentistry. And so for me, at the time I was kind of overwhelmed in dental school with the dental. I was kind of over it a little bit. I mean, the passion for education and dentistry really didn't, I think, come out till I like got it when I clicked out, realized how much I didn't know. But that's something I felt like was a really good kind of change of pace for me in dental school, other than the dentistry that was really is become very valuable, is just trying to find a knowledge and all that stuff. And Dad, what did you want to know? I see you raising your hand up there.
Well, when I was in school, there was no online. There was
no way. What?
And I got out in 88, just for those who in radio land here, podcast land. One of the things, my father was a dentist, and he encouraged me. He wanted me to go into periodontics. And so what he encouraged me to do was to seek out the oral surgeons, the periodontists, the endodontists. And so I would go at UT in Memphis, I would go to the graduate clinics and hang out after clinic on Friday afternoons. And I would sit there and watch the oral surgery residents. I would watch them do third molars. You know, I'd sit in their room and just watch. You know, I got to be friends with them. You know, I did a mini one summer. I did basically a 3-month residency they had for rising seniors that we were in the hospital doing broken jaws, the whole deal. But I also befriended some of these faculty members who were part-time, who were there one day a week, 2 days a week, especially a lot of the specialists. I would go out to the Memphis Periodontal Group and, you know, still friends with them today. And I would go, you know, 3 or 4 Fridays. Les Binkley. I would sit here and watch him, Dr. Ross, and P.D. Miller there in Memphis all Friday afternoon. And so I would sit there.
P.D. Miller classification.
Yeah. You know, that's I would awesome. Sit there and watch, you know, 7 or 8 osseous surgeries in an afternoon.
Wow.
And you're in dental school. Out of their room. Well, I'm in dental school. And I would the same thing with their oral surgeon, the same way with an endodontist. So what that allows you to do is not only to see, to get to know and see them, but you see how their practice works. Yeah. You know, one of the things I encouraged Sully to do here that we never got around to, but I would encourage the people out there in school.
I did some.
Go to the specialty practices in your area
when you're home on break.
Or other dentist offices.
Or other dentist offices. Hang out. I know we have people come here all the time. And it's really fun. They come here. We treat them like a king. We'll take them to lunch. We'll talk to them. We'll show you our books. We'll show you our staff.
It's so nice.
We're not bashful.
If you go, when you're home, yeah, if you'll go see other dentist offices, you get to see, one, things you like, things you don't like, things they're doing good, things are not going. Man, that's a great thing. Because when you're a student, but the dentist, they should be giving you, they should treat you well, at least.
Well, and then when you go look at these associateships and you walk in these different offices, you're going to have a better idea of what you like, what you want to see. You know, if you see go in some guy's office and he's got film x-rays and he's still pumping the chair, you know, maybe that's a clue.
Well, that's a good idea.
And always remember, you can always retake a test.
That's true.
But you can't retake a party.
You can't that's retake true. A party.
Talk about parties.
That's a fact. Man, true, I though. Missed middle school. I have
don't so much
fun. We all three of us had a good time. But I think it's probably why we're having fun now.
Yeah. So, I met at a party.
We did meet at a party.
He was DJing the music, and I didn't like what he was playing. I didn't know who he was. But
singer's got crappy taste in music.
I let him know, like, hey, this song is terrible.
Was he doing all country?
I don't even remember. No. It was bad. It was bad, though.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, this episode was really good. Millennial Mailbag, I like it. We're going to do this again. So keep sending us your either Instagram message us, Facebook message us, email us on the contact on the website. That seems to be the most common way to do it. But we love
Do we have
your
like
questions.
A direct like snail mail address that they can mail it to? Like,
they're millennials.
It's if you just go to like contact us on the Millennial Dentist website, millennialdentist.com, then it comes straight to that. I don't know. I'll look that up for next episode, though.
Yeah, what if someone wants to be our pen pal?
Well, we should be like you mean like, you want to be like whole shot at millennialdentist.com? We can make that happen. Payray at millennialdentist.com?
No, I think it's fun to have that one because you're doing a great job checking it.
It's like, I don't want messages coming to me.
No, I mean, shout out to this. I don't cut this out. Sully for putting all this together, because if it wasn't for him, and a lot of people approach us and get us and like, hey, man, we enjoy this. It's all honestly 90% Sully doing it and putting it together, because
no,
it takes a lot of time, and you're going to get out of school or you're already working and you see it takes a lot of time to just do your dentistry and get out and go home and be with the family. But what he's doing is incredible as far as caring to spread that knowledge and to spread that positivity, because not everybody is doing it. And that's something that I admire him for it. And I really appreciate
Thanks, brother, putting it together
because truly that's
Man,
a lot of time.
Yummy. I appreciate it.
Hey, you put in a lot of work. All of a sudden I'll get a text from Sully like 8 a.m. on a Saturday. And he's like, hey guys, like how about this day for an interview? And I'm like, dude, it's Saturday, man.
You want to be his partner. I get like texts at 5:30 in the morning. Go on QuickBooks Online. You need to update everything.
I'm just grinding.
The most random times I'll get these texts. Have you signed that partnership agreement yet?
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. Work harder, not smarter. We'll see you next time.
All right.
Woo!
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.